Thank you and welcome to another episode of Psyche of Sales. We are being joined right now by Emily and Bartek, and I want you to talk about yourselves and Levra, your company, which enhances human skills. Am I getting this right?
You are indeed. That was a very good synopsis.
I sort of was doing it on the fly a little bit there as well, so thank you for giving me the confidence that it went okay. I was fortunate enough to be introduced to Bartek a couple of days ago. We met again last night. I've seen you more than I've seen anyone, I think, since I've been here in London. Got to find out a bit about the company, and I'm incredibly impressed about what you do at a philosophical level, probably number one. So let's explore what it is that you do, but also from a business opportunity perspective, I think it's really unlimited. And it's got me thinking a lot about what we do in Enable and where that sort of sits as well. So it's really good. So Emily, we just met now, obviously, apart from our LinkedIn connection. Can you tell us a bit about yourself?
Yeah, of course. So in my former life, I was a lawyer. I spent a bit of time doing corporate law, and I'm also a certified coach. And that sort of led me into the realm of how can we fill our own potential, or the potential in other people.
I love that idea of fulfilling potential. We had a podcast yesterday with Cameron Vanderberg, a swimmer. I don't know if you've ever heard of him before.
I haven't.
Yes. South African.
Yeah. Of course, he's South African. He was introduced by this crew here. but he's a really impressive guy. 16 world records.
Wow.
And I love that he came, I love this bit, but he came ninth in the Olympics, in his first Olympics, and he missed out on getting into the final by 0.03.
Gosh.
And so he went back, changed some things, doubled down, broke a world record 3 months later.
Wow.
And I kind of think that idea of like hearing him talk about unlocking that human potential is pretty impressive. But we're not all Cameron Vanderbergs. Mm. We don't always have that same strict desire, or don't always know how to do it as well. And I think that, you know, from what I've seen, you know, high level of Levra, it gives the people that structure of how to, as well as the desire to. Bartek, do you want to explain maybe a bit about your background and then what Levra does?
Yeah, sure. Well, thanks for having us, Johnny. Good to see you again.
Vice versa. It's pretty cool, isn't it? I feel like I only saw you 14 hours ago.
maybe even less. A bit about myself. So, I mean, if we're talking about professional sort of backgrounds, I come from a family of medical doctors. And I think that's important to note, because I think the way I've been brought up is always have a mindset instilled in me to make a difference. And although I think like I'll never be able to make a tangible impact the same way that doctors can do, I always wanted to make a tangible impact through education. And that was kind of like my North Star, whatever, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But professionally spent 7 years at Deloitte in a chartered accountancy role, and then went on to do the MBA, and that's where Emily and I started Levra.
Could I quickly jump in and say a podcast with a lawyer and accountant? I know everyone's right now thinking this is must listening. Let's really get into this out there. But I promise you, they're the good kind. Very, very much so. I'm going to say it because you're probably too humble to, but you guys met as a doing your MBAs at Oxford, is that correct?
We did. Yeah, it feels like a million moons ago, but our paths collided when we both felt like we actually wanted to do something different with our careers. I definitely wasn't sure what that was, so went in a little bit blind. I think Bart probably had a bit more of an idea. He wanted to embark on the entrepreneurial world. But for me, it was a moment of realizing, actually, what next? And how do I want to fulfill my own potential? And what is the impact that I want to have on the world? So that's sort of what led me to Oxford.
It is interesting, isn't it, that I strongly considered doing an MBA a long time ago, and the different motivations behind doing it.
Mm.
You know, like coming from an entrepreneurial perspective, and I'll ask you for your take on that, but coming from it, not really sure, you know, what it is as well. And, you know, because it is a pretty significant commitment of time, I imagine.
Yeah, it is. But I think I had been so bogged down in the weeds of being a lawyer, long hours, living in this bubble, and realizing it wasn't for me, but also realizing I don't know what's next.
Yeah.
But I just need time out to actually step away and think about that. Yeah. And I think in our lives, we don't really have the opportunity to just press pause for a moment and really think, like, am I living the life that I want to lead, and am I doing what I want to do? And for me, that was what the MBA was really about. It was to explore different possibilities of what my future could look like.
It's a bit of a wow, aha moment for me hearing you talk about, am I living the life I want to lead? And I think it's because there's so many elements to that, isn't it? There's, you know, health, there's philosophy, friends, family, career. There's so many aspects that you can look at the life to lead. And so when you were talking, I was, of course, listening intently, but when you ask a question that powerfully, it's hard not to instantly go there. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like I'm sitting in Brewdog in London in a podcast studio chatting to you awesome people, thinking, yeah, in a lot of places, this is the life I really want to lead. Like, it's very intentional here.
Mm.
There's probably elements to my life that I think I wish I could do this a little bit better, a little bit differently. But this time out piece, I've got someone I know really well. He's an executive coach, very successful corporate career, sort of took a step back at early to mid-40s, and now he's an exec coach. And he doesn't do this as probably as much as he'd like to, but talking about this idea of wanting to spend a third of his time with clients, a third of his time finding clients, and a third of his time in reflection when it came to business. And just this idea of taking time out, reflecting, you know, it's such a great piece. And I'm heading away for the weekend, so I've got a lot of time on the train, a lot of time on an electric bike and things like this, and a bit of time in wineries and so on as well in Burgundy. But that idea of just taking that second, because you can't do it when it's harder to do it when you're 40 or 50 and you've got kids and you've got mortgages and, you know, like I financially couldn't take a year or two. Does that make sense? And so that idea of, I just think it's a really mature way of looking at life.
And I think we live our lives on this like hamster wheel of constantly executing, performing, delivering, what next, moving, that you don't actually have the opportunity to like to step back, as you say, and have that break. And those big kind of brain waves or light bulb moments don't happen when you're like heads in the book and you're working intensely. They happen when you're in the vineyard or, you know, in the shower in the morning. You know, it's when you actually step away from the day to day, then you suddenly have that aha moment.
Yeah, it's so true, isn't it? That idea of we're just chasing. Especially when we're talking about this idea of performance or unlocking potential, right? It's, you know, we talk about it a lot at Enable, this idea of how much time are you investing every week to make sure the other hours of the week are more effective? You know, I'm not asking people to work more hours.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, that's not the answer. Like, I did a piece of work with a very big law firm in Sydney with their graduates a few years up. Did we talk about this, the personal branding?
A little bit, yeah.
And they came to us with this idea of they're struggling to differentiate themselves. So they went to great schools and they did really, really well. They got into the top universities and they absolutely nailed it. And now they've got to a place where everyone's like that.
Mm.
They're not the highest performer. So how do they differentiate themselves? They think, what if I work more hours? But there isn't any more hours, right? I was a bit cynical with this law firm as well because they're saying, we don't want them working longer hours. I said, you do have a one chef-hatted chef here that cooks them dinner at night if they stay past 7 o'clock and they get a free taxi ride home if they stay past 10 o'clock. It kind of sounds like you
sounds very familiar.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I think that piece there, it becomes hard, and we were trying to say to them that working more hours won't equal a greater level of success. Look, there is a level of work ethic, right? That you've got to put in. You know, you're business owners now, so you'll know as well as anyone that extra 5, 10, 20 hours a week does make an impact. What about you, Bartek? What are your thoughts around this human performance and how you got into it?
Well, if I think back to one of the aha moments for me, I mean, similar, I won't repeat some of the stuff that Emily said about going into Oxford with taking time to reflect. But the one exercise we did at the beginning of the MBA was we had 100 different jobs. I don't know, Ems, if you remember that. That 100 different jobs and like random jobs from banker, accountant, rock star, Hollywood actor, whatever, like all these different.
You looked at me then, didn't you?
I did look straight at you, especially singing. And the task was, it sounds simple, but now I'm in a new environment with ambitious people, and the task was, rank your top 10 jobs. Take money out of the equation.
Yep.
So hypothetically, you know, you choose the correct 10, you get $1 million a day for the rest of your life.
Yep.
And you take time to think about that. And all my top 10 answers were nothing to do with auditing or accounting or corporate world.
Yes.
It was all performance and singing. And I mean, you know, this is obviously a hypothetical situation. Yep. But if money wasn't the object and if I could do whatever I wanted to do in this world, it would be something with that.
Yes.
So then that made me think of it and saying, well, okay, that is now my definition of a North Star, something to do with performance and speaking and whatever the case may be. And realistically, I'm not going to go start Coldplay and be Chris Martin, but what can I do that gets me closer towards this North Star? So it's not completely going away to say, I'm going to do investment banking because it sounds cool on my CV to be in Bank of America. No, I want to do something that's closely linked to that idea and slowly work towards that and eventually reach this pinnacle of whatever I'm searching for. And that kind of feels good because I feel like I'm on the right path now, which for many years of my professional journey, I wasn't. So that was the aha moment for me.
You're both getting me thinking a lot more than I wanted to today. So I'm a bit offended by this. And I feel like maybe next time I'm here, if it's okay, if we could catch up again, I'd love to really explore this in quite a bit of detail. I love this way of thinking. I'm finding it challenging as well. you know, obviously there's the ikigai piece of yep. What is it like? What do you love? What are you good at? What can you earn? And what provides meaning? Mm. You know, and finding it there. And I did a bit of reading on that a number of years ago. And a friend of mine explained what I did to someone once. And they said, well, what Johnny does is he, you know, those really successful businesses that make lots of money, he helps them make more, right? Like really kind of going to the cynical view of what we do. And I sort of reflected on it and thought, in a way we do. Like we do help major organizations make more money. We mm. help them gain market share. But we don't really do that. What we do is we help the individuals who work there become better at what they do.
Mm.
We increase their confidence. We increase the enjoyment of what they do. We help them move through careers. And sometimes that's not always a good thing because they get promoted to careers they don't want, right? And I've got a few at the moment that I'm dealing with that are going through that kind of moment out there. And I got a call from a client in December. They did one-on-ones with every single one of their private wealth advisors. And I got a phone call. We worked with about 30-odd and didn't work with the rest of them. And she said that, I just want to say thank you. This 30 walked in individually for one-on-ones with us with a total confidence. They love what they do. They have a clear plan of how they're going to execute their strategy. And you could genuinely see the difference between those advisors and the ones that you didn't work with. And you kind of think, that's kind of cool when you think about the individual impact. Now, that obviously impacts an organization.
Mm.
Like if you have 30 people out of 60 that are increasing their business by 30-odd%, that will increase an organization's. But you don't do it by saying, let's help organization ABC be better. And I feel like Leverer has that ability to really impact that.
Mm.
That each individual, using some pretty cool tools, which I'd love to explore.
Yeah.
And I'd like to literally explore them. I think that'd be pretty cool. But
we've actually got a headset, yeah. If
you want. Do you really?
Yeah.
I'd do this whole thing virtually. Would that be hilarious if we all did it virtually in the same room? I actually came across a guy on Instagram who literally plays VR cricket. Like
wow.
This whole thing, he's got like 40,000 followers out there, and I now want this VR cricket set. It like looks pretty cool.
Mm.
But who wants to have a go at explaining Leverer and what you do?
I'll jump in. So what Leverer does, or how we break it down, is three components. Firstly, we coach human skills. So that's everything from active listening to working in a team to empathy. Secondly, we do it using fun and immersive technology like virtual reality, as you just mentioned. And finally, we measure behavioral change. So what we actually really care about is not whether someone's completed a course or, you know, answered the three questions at the end of an e-learning module. It's actually, can we see real behavioral change as a result of our programs?
Yeah, okay. It is the piece, isn't it, that if you get focused on the outcome, mm. you describe it as a lag indicator, and most businesses do get caught up in this, or we get caught up in maybe the metrics around certain pieces, we do miss the behavioral piece.
Mm.
And with our platform, one of the things we invested heavily in is the measurement of usage to the minute.
Amazing. Right?
And we do that not to catch people out. We do it because if you're a low performer in your role as a salesperson and nothing changes from a market perspective and nothing, you don't put any effort in being better,
mm.
I can tell you with total confidence in my experience that they will not be any better the next year. So if you're unhappy with their result today and they don't do anything about being better, that you will be even more unhappy with the result the next year.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Now, people think I'm putting a lot of pressure on the salesperson. I'm putting it on the leader.
Mm.
What are you doing to link, you know, investing in themselves into performance? The individuals need to take responsibility as well. I'm not suggesting that. But what kind of conversations are you having to drive that? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it definitely does. And I think it's about encouraging people to have a growth mindset, that realizing actually you may not naturally be born with the skills of, you know, strong confidence or good emotional intelligence, but actually those are skills that you can cultivate. And for so long, I think we've seen, you know, you're either good at presenting or you're not,
yes,
or you're good at talking to people or you're not, but you can actually learn some of these skills. And that's what we're really focused on at Level, is coaching some skills that.
But I did a wedding speech a number of years ago, and I got off stage. I was actually a bit nervous about it because I'm a bit more emotional.
You're nervous?
Yes, but I genuinely, I do get nervous quite a bit, right? Because we all do. Like, if, you know, standing in front of hundreds of people or things like this, and I delivered this talk, and I got back to my table, and a guy turned to me. This sounds like a really show-off story, by the way, but I'm not meaning it. Just says, "I've never seen anyone do that." He said, "You're just so confident." He goes, you're just a natural, aren't you? And that word natural, I took it as almost an insult into the fact of the tens of thousands of hours I've put into this craft.
Yeah.
Right. And I promised you 10 years ago or 15 years ago or 20 years ago, had I done the same speech, it would have been nothing like that. He didn't put in the fact that I was in my hotel room practicing my opening to make it feel and sound natural. That I looked at the venue when other people were having a drink to say, "Where will I stand?" Does that make sense? Like, it's those little pieces that people take away from the fact that these are learnt. Doesn't mean that someone who's more charismatic or someone who's more engaging or, you know, more energetic, they might find it easier or have a clearer base. But Steve Jobs wasn't the most outgoing, charismatic human being. Yet when speaking coaches talk about a speech, they talk about that university, what do you call it, like a view. Because what he does, he anchors it to three clear points that people walk away with knowing.
Yeah. And trained on it.
Yeah.
And it reminds me actually of the story that you mentioned at the beginning of this podcast about the South African athlete focusing on that 0.03 incremental change.
Yeah.
And it loops back to this. It's you don't suddenly become a good presenter or speaker overnight, but it's those small incremental steps and improvements that lead you over 5 or 10 years to then suddenly becoming confident and able to stand up in front of 200 people.
The other thing, though, as well, is he actually, what was interesting, didn't focus on the time. He took some time to reflect. He got a sports psychologist, and he focused on what he was great at, and then a couple of areas he could, tiny little things he could do better, like you're saying. And I think you mentioned active listening, right? So let's say I'm your boss, but you go into a meeting, and I walk away and say, "Look, you need to get better at active listening. I could see that you weren't, the client didn't think you were listening, you kept looking away," and so on. That is very unhelpful to Bart. Like, that doesn't help Bart. Mm. But if you said, "Hey, Bart, I want to talk to you about how you went in that meeting. How do you think you went?" Had a conversation with Bart around it and said, "I want to tell you one thing is that," tell him a couple of things that you did really well, "but I found you're a little distracted." The impression you gave to the client was you were a bit distracted, and that was through your eye contact, moving back and forth. And what I'd love you to do is just get yourself in a position where you can be really focused on the client. Not that you don't listen to them, but they feel heard. Does that make sense? And the reason I bring it up with you, Bart, is we've had a number of conversations, and you're one of the best active listeners I've ever met, right? But whether it's this, you know, the nerves of the meeting, or whether it's this, or you're trying to work out what to say, and having a conversation around that has a higher likelihood of getting a positive behavioural change. And that's why we put a lot of pressure on leaders in this. And I imagine some of the organisations that you work with have large leadership groups with diverse skills. Does that make sense? Like, some are going to be great coaches and mentors. Others are going to be busy, intelligent people who just, "Hey, you do that better. You need to do this."
Yeah, and it's such a good point, because often in today's working world, everyone is busy. You know, you ask anyone and it's, "I'm busy and I've got no time to do anything." Sometimes all you need, for example, you know, someone makes a first impression of you in 8 seconds.
Yep.
Within 8 seconds, that person has made a judgment of you, whether you like it or not. That is just how the human nature. So what can you do in those 8 seconds that just helps your chance of getting better? Similar to active listening. You know, you don't have to have a 20-minute conversation with someone every time, but what can you do in those 2 minutes that makes it impactful and that high-impact scenarios? That's what we focus on.
And you talk about that, and I'm going to go into coach mode here, not to yourselves, but just to in general. When we prepare someone to speak and they say, hi, my name's Johnny Lee, I'm the CEO of Enable SE. We're an organization that does this, 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 this. And today, what I'd like to do is to talk to you about this, 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 and this. You've made no impact.
Mm.
Like, literally. Or you could start by saying, my goal for today when you walk out is that each and every one of you are going to take something into your next meeting that's going to give you greater impact. Not five things, not 10, just one thing that'll give you a greater impact in every meeting that you go into. Because if you impact every meeting and you do 10 meetings a week, right, that is going to be 500 a year. And you can imagine over a career how impactful that could be. And then it might be next year you learn a second thing. And if you know, the difference between that and then say, my name's Johnny, like, does it matter, my name, or my role? If you're speaking somewhere, more often than not, you're introduced anyway. And it's that idea that we lead with this chunk of irrelevant information. So what's the first impression? Cross.
Yeah.
I'm not interested. I'm bored. Or you're just like everybody else. I'm not saying you lead with a joke or, you know, these things. And it's not even that idea of, how do I put it, leading with, you know, because people will tell you this structure. The differentiator is people walk away going, I'd like to walk away with that. So I'll listen. And that's the goal in the first 10 seconds. I want you to want to listen to me.
Yeah, I can't remember who said it, but it's a quote which goes along the lines of, it's actually not what you say, but it's how you make people feel. And that's the most important thing in having any type of conversation, is how do people feel after you've spoken to them or after you've interacted with them? Do they feel uplifted? Do they feel empowered? You know, those are sort of some of the things that we're focused on. And I know you are, Johnny, too, but it's like changing that mindset of how they can approach things differently.
We use the term do, think, feel. What do you want them to do? What do you want them to think? And what do you want them to feel as a result of this communication?
Yeah.
We actually have a mini module, a micro learning unit, or preparing for a meeting in less than 30 seconds. We cannot get the explanation in less than 30 seconds. So it looks really silly when you've got a 49-second video to tell you how to do it in 30.
Yeah.
But that's what it is. It is do, think, feel. It is what do you want them to do, think, and feel as a result of this meeting, this podcast, this communication. It doesn't take long, but it shapes the intent. And I think that's a really important thing of you know, before we walk into a meeting, before we pick up the phone, before we send a text message, to pause. What do I want? What do being the action, think being the mindset, and feel meaning, how do we actually want to impact them? Do we want them to feel heard? Do we want them to feel excited? Do we want them to feel safe, comfortable? You know, there's a whole bunch of emotions that we can make someone feel by, as you've put it, listening, by demonstrating empathy. You know, like as a leader, sometimes I'll be hard on people and they're saying, you know, I think you're being really hard on me, very intentionally. I want you to know how critical this is, right? Because, like, but you need to have intent to do it. If you're just being hard because you're reacting, then it's a, you know, it's a poor communication.
And I mean, reiterating the point that more often than not, people just think that these skills are, you know, innate and you either have them or not. But we use the analogy, and we love Simon Sinek as an example, and he kind of talks about falling in love. And when you fall in love with someone, it's a process over time. You don't walk past someone and say, oh my word, you know, sometimes love at first sight, but does that really exist? Falling in love with someone needs to be constant, small efforts over time. The same with leadership or professional development. You don't just do a 2-day workshop and say, everyone is now leaders. Well done. You know, we're leaders. We've finished a 2-day workshop. It needs to
you
be
this.
You
say you don't do that, but most organizations do.
Well, they do it, but you don't become a leader.
That's right.
You know, you have to have these small, incremental, impactful changes over time. And like we were saying last night a lot, you got to practice. You've got to keep practicing. It takes a constant effort. But the positive thing is that these skills are analytical and they can be taught. And there are certain elements of them that you can actually learn and grow from.
So I spent some time a few weeks ago in Auckland, New Zealand, with Joseph Kim. I might even connect him to this post where we release it. He's one of five master trainers from Simon Sinek around the world.
Oh, wow.
And
he did the keynote at the event of one of my clients over there. So not only did we, I get to hear him speak, but I got to spend the first afternoon on a boat with him, swimming in the ocean of Auckland and having a few drinks. And then we went out for dinner the next night together as well. And we really connected and bonded on a number of aspects and connections between his beliefs versus our beliefs in selling and management and leadership. And we've vowed to stay very much in touch, and he's going to jump on the podcast and the things as well. So just when you bring that up, I probably, really connected to that idea of just those little interactions. And that's how we suggest people nurture leads in selling.
Mm.
Like, you don't pick up the phone and say, hey, I'd like to you know, buy licenses to Leverer to invest in this. Like, it's too quick. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But it's this idea of, hey, we're seeing some really great results around getting more at the human level of graduates, which is leading to greater retention of great people, right? Of hiring and attracting the best people, increasing enjoyment and culture within an organization. And from what you've been talking about in the media, I think it'd be worth having a quick conversation.
Mm.
Like, you know, and then just have a really curious conversation about those things that we know impact businesses, right? And then from that conversation, you know, are they the right people? Like, because sometimes they've got a pressing need, they're ready to go, right? Other times, it's, yeah, this is really interesting, right? Well, it'd be great to have another conversation at some point. As we keep getting more information, do you mind if I shoot it through to you? It's those little pieces.
Yeah.
And one day, someone will say, you got lucky, and I had this once, a colleague said, it was one of my biggest wins ever, was at the time. It was 23 emails, calls, interactions over 4.5 years, and then I won a $250,000 deal in 2 weeks from the first meeting, and they said, gee, you're lucky, that one just fell into your lap. Yeah, really lucky, right? It's those little iterations, and that's why
you're natural.
Yeah, that's right. But it is that piece of sales, I think, relates to so much around leadership, around coaching, around, well, like, even talk about active listening.
Mm.
Try and be good at selling if you're not good at active listening. Like, it's impossible, right? And so I think that it's such a driver. So tell me about typically how do you work with, like, I know at a high level, but do you want to give me a more practical example of how it looks like when you work with a people within an organization?
I can maybe start off, but what we have learned, and I think we've also taken away some stuff from this conversation and our interaction in the last 2 days, but the first part is a discovery session to understand a lot from the client. And the way we approach the initial discussions is, we want to hear from you. You know, where are the issues? What's currently going on? Once we've got that, we in the background, we've created a program called Upskill Me or Leader Me or Manage Me. There's different programs that we currently roll out to organizations. That's the way it's delivered practically, is bite-sized fun learning through a learning portal, as well as practice through VR headsets. But not to focus on that, the way we deliver it is more important about what we, you know, what is that return on investment, which Emily mentioned earlier, that third part of the measurement. So it's basically bridging the gap between where the client is at the moment and where they want to get to, and how we can use human skills to, you know, coaching human skills to get there and show tangible measurement around it. If that makes sense, without talking too much about the technical product, and maybe you can touch a bit on like how it's practically works.
Yeah, I think just to recap on what you both said, it's firstly like not going into a meeting thinking we've got to convert them today.
Yes.
It's a long-term game. It's building relationships. 12 to 15 touch points you need before supposedly converting a client. And so what we do spend a lot of time on, and what we've been doing this morning, is just understanding what are the problems that they're seeing, what are some road blockages that come up in their day-to-day work. And I think that is really important before jumping to try and solve all of those problems. Like, do you really get their business? Do you really understand them? Do you understand what is beneath all of the noise? And I think that makes it a lot easier for you then to go forward following that conversation.
So two quick things. One is that 12 to 15 will change as your business matures.
I'm sure.
So it starts off quite big, and then as you get more success and you get more coverage of a market, it'll come down. And so, you know, for me, my early years was about 13.8 or something. We worked it out, contact points, and now it's like 1.9 or something.
Well, that shows your power, if anything.
What it shows is that we get inquiry now of, can you do this? I'd like to buy more life. I'd like this. So you get a lot of...
It's like a golf handicap,
one
right?
One contact points, right?
Yeah, people so then, coming to you.
Yes, that's right. And but now we're in the UK, it'll blow out again. It'll be back to 12, or probably not 12, but it might be 7 or something like that out there. And I'm seeing it because we're meeting people who don't know us. We don't have the credibility instantly. You know, it's if I tried to pitch something to the group last night prior, right? If I said, hey, 50% off an AdBlock Q licenses, with zero. But after, I've got people approaching saying, hey, I'm really interested to hear more about this. I'm really stuck in this spot. You know, it's that aspect of being able to build that. So that was number one, is that will come down. What was the other piece you talked about? You touched on, sorry.
Touch points and understanding what's beneath the noise.
That's right. So their drivers, right? What's really their problem? What's their challenge and their drivers? And so if we work with an organisation to be better at that, you know, we talked about it last night, didn't we, Bart, about don't ask 20 questions about 20 different topics. Ask 10 questions about one topic. Get deep around that. Tell me, why is the lack of retention of graduates a problem? Right? There's plenty more out there. Yeah, but we're not getting access to the best ones. What would have access the best ones do for you? Or what do you think the actual... Like, stay there in the conversation. But if you just train on that, what we find is then the organisation or the salespeople or the executive just pitches the same thing they were going to anyway. And so that's the second link, is that understand the driver, but whatever our offering is has to be related specific to their driver and specifically to what they say. So if someone says, just overwhelmed at the moment because of this, and we respond with, we're going to show you how to invest in the skills to be able to provide more time back in your diary. No, our goal is to release the overwhelm, right? By doing this, and this. Does that make sense?
And it's
that connection of the two that is where you get nirvana, where that magic happens.
And being naturally curious, I think, is also very helpful. Like, I think for both Bart and I, we love asking questions, we love understanding things, we love unraveling pieces, puzzles, and that natural curiosity actually is very helpful, I think, in the industries that we work in.
I had an analyst move into a sales role, and it was like my first ever gig in sort of the corporate world, and if he listens to this, he'll know who he is, and he said to me, you always talk about being curious and asking these questions, but what if you just don't care? And I said, you better learn to care. It's going to be a long career. And he's very successful, and he does care. But it is that aspect of, you know, having someone who's curious and cares, who actually wants to know, like genuinely curious, it's just such a step. Like, it's such a advantage.
How do you bring that out in someone if, you know, you come across an individual and it doesn't seem like they're interested or motivated, and you can't get underneath the skin? Like, how would you approach that?
As in coaching someone to be more curious? I think by demonstrating to them curiosity, by really getting a better understanding of them, what makes them tick, why they, you know, sometimes they're just a bit closed. And if you can get within it, like if I'm presenting, like preparing an exec to speak, let's say I'm preparing to you, and let's say you're a bit closed in, you're far from it, so, but we'll suggest that you are. I'll then just stop and get you talking. What are you interested in? You know, we start talking about the football, we start talking about cricket, we start talking about life or travel or wine or food, whatever. And then sometimes I'll even film them when they're talking about it and say, this is what you look like when you're talking about something you're passionate about. How do we unlock passion about this? And I'll say the other thing in the world you work in is that we put on what we think people want to see. So it's this idea of, you know, I'm a consultant. A consultant should dress like this, should speak like this. I'm a lawyer, so I should be this. And you put on the, and I think it's even harder for females in a lot of the industry where you're putting on this, you know, I've got to be professional, I've got to be this. And one of the things we often talk about, this idea of, just takes time to get the confidence to just be you, because you can hire 100 people who are formal and professional. Mm. That's actually not a hard trade to find. But I tell you what, it's really damn hard to find someone who's like you, Emily, or like you, Bart, like who can just be themselves, who is curious, who actually, like, both very good at joining dots. Does that make sense? Like, you can see in your mind how quickly things get put together.
Mm.
Like, we had a conversation about your business on Tuesday, and I could see within a minute, you'd sort of gone, ah, that client, we could have a different conversation with them. Like, that's a trait.
Yeah.
That is so hard to find, but we're not demonstrating it if we formalize conversations. Does that make sense? Mm. And so it's that ability to be able to get to a confident level where I can just be me in front of you. And we've all done it. We've all been there.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, what immediately came to mind now, it goes back to that idea of reflecting and taking time to reflect. I can't remember when it was a couple of years ago, but someone said to me in heated moments in conversation, or when there's, and this has been in my auditing days, so maybe not as exciting as now, but in heated moments when you're discussing misstatements or overs and unders or overtime, whatever the case may be, almost remove yourself from your body and have like a little Bartek watching over, like, are you aware as to how you're acting? Are you aware as to like how you're portraying yourself?
Yeah.
Because the moment you almost have that like level of reflection, which often you get caught into like the weeds and you get so caught up with the pressure of it all,
yeah,
that you forget to actually realize, wait, let me just take a second to watch myself.
Yeah.
And am I proud of the way I'm acting, or is this the way that I should be acting, if that makes sense?
So think about that from a lawyer, a consultant, an accountant firm, and how much training goes into the impression we give when we do things. You know, walking into a meeting, how we ask questions, how we, you know, receive responses. Look, and this idea of having the little Bartek or the little Emily looking over you, but it's this idea of, we sort of talk about this idea of practice. And if, where are we practicing to be good at this? Like, if we're not, one, being taught it, but number two, practicing it, then we're practicing on the customer, or we're practicing in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And you think of the great sporting teams of the world, think of Simon Sinek, they're not practicing on their keynotes or on the field.
Mm.
They've done it to the point where it's great and natural. And I think that, you know, this guy Cameron yesterday, the swimmer, he's now a hedge fund portfolio manager. And he put the same effort in to that. He spoke to leaders, got mentors. What can I do? They ask him to read a book. He reads it. Great, I read it. This is what my takeouts were. What else should I read? Like, he sort of, that same level of intent and intensity. And I think this is a real missing piece in that graduate piece, because we learn a lot at uni. Let's just say I didn't go to uni. I'm sure I would have, though, if I'd gone. But then who's helping them take that to apply it, right, in these large organizations? And I suppose the answer is Lever.
Well, I was about to say, I mean, that is where Lever comes in, yeah, exactly, because that is exactly the gap, to have that psychologically safe environment to practice and learn. A lot of the time we analogize it to a battlefield, you know. A lot of the times you're using virtual reality technology to put pilots into a real situation, or electricians, and if you click the wrong button, there's going to be an explosion. So why can't that same be applied for professional behavioral communication skills, in the sense that you have this psychologically safe but fun environment where you can make mistakes? And if you do that wrong, no, that is not correct, because this will happen. And that's where you can practice and learn and become more confident in how you actually interact.
Yeah, I love it. I know we're getting very short on time.
Yes.
But I'm. What we might do is post a podcast, maybe get a quick video out there with the VR and have a look and a play.
Why not?
I'd love to share that with our connections and followers and things like this. Plus, I'm just curious. I just really want to see it and play with it. But I think I've had a lot of interactions and meetings since I've been in London, not just in wine bars and Noble Rot and things like this. Although I am copying a little stick on my Instagram. People are saying, are you literally going to the same restaurant every day? Like, it's like, there's three of them. I'm going to different ones. But
have you been to Noble Rot, by the way?
Yeah, a few times. One of my husband's favourites.
Which one do you go to?
Usually the one near us in Soho.
Soho. Okay, yeah. That's very quaint.
Yeah, it's very sweet. It's beautiful. Hard to get a table, but it's gold dust.
I got the last one, and about 9 other people kept asking for it. They're sitting me on my own at a table for 4. A bit cranky, I think. But But I think that when we sat down, Bart, and had a chat, one was your warmth immediately came across, how welcome you wanted me to feel, which I thought was really brilliant. And yesterday, you and Dev and Ryan, like, that came across immediately. I just felt comfortable, which I want to say thank you for that as well, because I really had a ball. But I think that the idea of leverage spoke to me, because I think it's this idea of the better we do with these people of that 20 to 25 age bracket, the greater leaders we're going to have, the greater executors we're going to have, but we're going to create a culture of betterment. And that is going to help individuals, organizations, pass that on to the next generation, pass that on to the next generation. And have you heard of Jim Quick?
No, I haven't, actually.
He sort of talks about this idea of retaining information and so that brain power. He says this idea of every time you listen to a podcast, every hour you spend on a podcast, you should spend at least an hour looking at how do you apply it. And it just makes so much more sense, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that the work you're doing is phenomenal. I think that there is a piece. I love to hear how you got there. You know, that North Star, and just a cheeky MBA at Oxford as well to help you get there as well. But what it means to me is you're passionate about what you do. There's meaning behind it, and you're doing it for a real reason. And I think if you do that and execute daily, you can't help but be a success. So certainly any support that we can offer, I'd love to help. Pretty excited by the journey as well, and it's given me a bit of a kick in the backside to look at how we engage in that audience as well. Who knows, potentially we might be able to help each other in that space. So, Bart, Emily, thank you so much for coming on board. It's been phenomenal.
Thank you so much for having us. Really kind and brilliant conversation.
Yeah, Johnny, thank you. It's been amazing, and just the beginning of our journey together.
100%. We catch up tomorrow as well.
Just like yeah, why not? In France?
Yes, yeah, right. We'll come to Burgundy as well.
I'm sure there's seats on the train, so come along.
And as the Aussies say, see you later.
See you later.